I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast. Today, we're speaking with Steve Mansfield, director of the Ledgelight Health District, the public health agency for the towns of East Lyme, Groton, Ledyard, Lyme, New London, North Stonington, Old Lyme, Stonington, and Waterford, Connecticut. Good afternoon, Steve.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
Doing well. To start off, would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I've been working here at Ledgelight Health District since 1998. It's hard to believe that much time has gone by. I've been director of health for Ledgelight going into my seventh year now. I started as an environmental professional and then spent quite a bit of time as the emergency preparedness coordinator. And then I became head of the environmental health division, eventually deputy director, and now director of health. So definitely worked my way up the ladder in this organization.
Excellent. And what motivated you to work in the field of public health?
Well, I went to Southern Connecticut State University. I began my studies in biology, and then I kind of stumbled upon public health by taking a course in epidemiology, which I really enjoyed. Switched my major in the middle of my sophomore year, and then continued with that education and got my undergrad in public health, and then eventually my graduate degree from UConn in public health as well.
Okay, and clearly 2020 and 2021 have been big years for you and your career. Today, when we're speaking, is March 1st, and there's a new category of Connecticut residents available to sign up for the COVID-19 vaccine. A major part of that category is educators and daycare personnel. Could you talk a little bit about the strategies for getting them vaccinated, and then the other part of that category, which is people from 55 to 64?
Sure. I think it's important for everyone to recognize the fact that we hear about these changes at just about the same time the public does. So although we're always preparing for changes to the priority groups and making sure we have plans in place, we weren't prepared for this age-based prioritization, the fact that all teachers and administrators and so forth would be eligible. Now, that being said, we've been working with Uncas Health District, the Hartford Hospital System, and the Yale Health System to make sure we had a plan in place for any eventuality. And so when this came into effect, we again reached out to our partners and said, okay, we have to vaccinate people in the educational sector in short order. The governor's mandate is before the end of March. How can we get this done? So it was truly a partnership. There were definitely other partners involved, but those are the primary four. And we came up with a plan to vaccinate all of our educational partners and also those who provide childcare services. So right now we're waiting on a registration link from Hartford Hospital. As soon as that comes into my office, we'll be distributing that to all of our superintendents and childcare providers throughout our jurisdiction. They'll get it out to their respective employees, and then they'll be able to be vaccinated. I think patience is the word of the day. We know that Hartford Hospital only has about 1,000 doses this first week. So, of course, there's no way we're going to be able to vaccinate everyone. We have about 6,000 people in that category. But the governor made it clear that it was local health's responsibility to make sure that this population get vaccinated in a timely manner. So we're lucky in southeastern Connecticut that we have such great partners, and we've been building those relationships for years. So we'll be able to do it. And I've been very clear with all of our school systems and childcare providers that we're very confident by the end of March that we'll get them all vaccinated.
Excellent. So we've read about one or two mass vaccine sites that will be open in southeastern Connecticut, but which site is most relevant to your district?
So Hartford Hospital is partnering with Ledgelight to provide the vaccination site at the Mashantucket Tribal Nation. Uncas Health District is partnering with the Yale system, and they're going to be providing their mass vaccination clinics at the Mohegan Sun. It just worked out best that way logistically, based on the number of people, the number of people who are eligible for the vaccination, and so forth. So it's starting this week for sure. And there'll be clinics scheduled to accommodate a lot of different schedules. weekend clinics, night clinics. One of the things we're very cognizant of is the fact that when people get the vaccination, a percentage of them have some type of adverse reaction. Actually, it's not an adverse reaction. It's just a side effect that may cause them to be out of school the following day. I know that was true in my organization. So staggering people in within one particular school is important, so you don't actually have to shut down the school because of absenteeism. So we're going to leave that up to our school systems, our superintendents, to make the determination about who should be vaccinated first, but that's definitely a consideration that, that should be made.
And if you're in the rest of that category, if you are 55 and older and live in the district, what should you, I'm sure you're going to say patients also, but what else should you know?
I start most sentences these days with patients is the word of the day. Obviously, moving to the 55 plus, it opens it up for a lot of people, and people will be eligible, but I think it's important for everyone to keep in mind there are people who are more at risk based on their age, based on underlying conditions, based on where they live, their ethnicity. So keep those things in mind. We all want to get vaccinated as quickly and efficiently as possible, but the system definitely won't be able to keep up with the demand in the next few weeks. We hope the vaccine allocations will increase significantly and we'll be able to vaccinate all of our populations. But vaccine scarcity is one of the things that we've been dealing with since the beginning of the pandemic. Our biggest week, I think, was 900 doses that we received, and we have a standing allocation of 400. In a jurisdiction, we cover just about 153,000 people, and that's not a lot of vaccine. But luckily, we're not the only provider. You know, local health districts, the pharmacies, private care providers, the hospitals, and so forth. So we're just one cog in that wheel and doing our best to make sure we get the vaccine out as efficiently as we can.
Getting back to the schools, that has also been a ballet and a balancing act throughout the school year and the last school year. Steve, you've recommended that schools resume full in-person learning, but through a phased approach. Can you talk about that a little bit and then talk about how the schools are faring overall?
Sure. I'll start by saying, you know, our school systems have been extremely communicative throughout the whole pandemic. It's a partnership for sure. We started by reviewing their plans in the fall, making sure they were adhering to all of the CDC guidelines, and they've really done a great job. And I think the rates of illness in our schools, the school-based transmissions, are directly reflective of that. The mitigation measures that have been put in place in our school systems are the primary reason why we don't see kids getting sick in the school system. Now, there are absolutely kids students and staff members who may acquire the illness, but they're really few and far between. So although the SDE documents, if you're familiar with the addendums, addendum 4, addendum 9, they give very specific guidelines for when you should consider staying in a hybrid model, moving toward a more in-person model, or moving toward a more remote model. And I always like to explain to anyone who will listen that those are a great place to start. They're a baseline. And you can look at those and say, okay, where do we stand? But the most important thing to do is to recognize what is going on in our schools. Is the risk really high? And what we've seen, the data that DPH has shared, and it's anecdotal data, they don't have a really formal analysis, but there doesn't seem to be a significant difference between those schools that have remained in an in-person learning mode versus those who have been in a remote mode. So that says a lot. But it doesn't mean we should jump in with both feet by any means. And that's where the phased-in approach comes in. And most of the school systems in my jurisdiction have decided to start with the younger students, bring them back in, phase them, continue the social distancing as much as possible, barriers in the classroom if necessary, proper cleaning methods, and see how that goes. And although they may have scheduled the higher grades to come back, they are very adamant that it's contingent upon the data. We've had 6 weeks in a row now of decreasing community-based infections. So we hope that will continue. And obviously the variants, that's a wild card we don't know about. So if we see a resurgence in cases or variants that come into our jurisdiction that are more transmissible, that may change their plans and they may not decide to go to a more full in-person learning model for the older grades. But that's yet to be seen. But I think it's great to have those plans in place. And if the data supports it, they should move in that direction.
Great. We've all had to learn to be much more flexible with our lives. Where do sports fall into that plan tentatively?
So that's a great question. I wrote a correspondence to all the superintendents who are considering moving to a more in-person learning model. And one of the things that I emphasized was the fact that extracurricular and sporting activities should be taken into consideration. Of course, we want to return to as much of a normal school year as possible, but we shouldn't do things that will take away from the actual learning environment. So what we've seen at Ledge Light Health District are contact tracers surrounding schools. We see infections and clusters and outbreaks associated with social gatherings, sports, and I think surprisingly, a lot of the social activities that surround sports have been implicated in outbreaks and so forth. So we want to see sports continue cautiously, but we don't want to see them continue at an expense to students going to school every day and learning. Every time there's an outbreak, every time there's an infection, there are subsequent quarantine procedures that have to be put in place, and that causes a disruption in schools. So there's definitely a big administrative burden whenever there is an infected student or staff member and the associated quarantine measures that have to be put in place. So we'll be looking at that very closely. And if we see that certain activities are contributing to rates of infection or increased rates of infection, then we'll be sure to communicate that with our superintendents.
And finally, with the one-year anniversary now of the pandemic approaching, I wondered if you could talk about how Ledge Light Region has fared overall, and then the best and worst case scenarios for a return to our normal, whatever that may be.
Yeah, that's a big question. So I think we've fared really well. This is the second pandemic in my career, about 11 and a half years ago with H1N1. That's where we really got our feet wet, setting up mass dispensing clinics, contact tracing, and all of those things. And we're using a lot of the same systems we used back then to make sure that we can do the work we need to do. But one of the critical things that's missing, and I'm actually giving testimony tomorrow to the legislature, is funding for local health departments. We've been underfunded for such a long period of time. For those of you who don't know, our funding comes from primarily from contributions from our municipalities. We have environmental fees that we collect, and we have grants and contracts, but the state provides very little funding for local public health. Currently, the statute says they provide $1.85 per capita, which hasn't moved in a long time, in years, and it's actually lower than it was about 10 years ago. So in addition to it being an extremely low number for the past at least 3 years in a row, the governor has then cut that budget by an additional 10%. So, and that's what the governor's budget is projected for this year, to cut local health's budget by 10%. So I can't fathom considering that in the middle of a pandemic and the amount of work that we do. And I know from my budget, you know, we have a rainy day fund that we're dipping into because we have to hire those individuals to do the work. And we should be supported just like any other entity, especially in the midst of the pandemic. So, but I think we're doing really well otherwise. We've hired a half dozen additional staff since the beginning of the pandemic. And we've been really successful in doing everything that we need to do. And I think that that's true throughout Demis Planning Region 4. We all work really, really well together. I think we're all fatigued. I know my staff is fatigued. We have to actually force people to take time off, because if we don't, you know, we are truly working 24/7, and it's not just management. It's not just our nurses and administrative staff. It's everyone who works at Ledge Light Health District, because we still have to run the health district. We still have responsibilities to inspect food service establishments and do all of our public health nursing work and our preparedness work and all the grants that we manage for different programs. So those things don't stop just because of a pandemic starts. So we have to continue to do what we've been doing. And we all want to return to a semblance of normalcy and open up our offices and have meetings in person. We're very much looking forward to that. And I don't think we're that far away. I think the vaccination campaign is going really well in Connecticut. We're, at the last I looked, we're in the top five as far as the number of people that have been vaccinated. We are specifically in Ledgeside Health District trying to focus on those underserved populations in our communities. And that's one of the reasons we're so happy to have Hartford Hospital as a partner. If they can vaccinate all of our school personnel and all of our childcare providers, well, that frees us up to concentrate on those underserved populations within our jurisdiction and make sure that the disparity that exists in this whole vaccination campaign is lessened, at least in our jurisdiction.
Excellent. Well, thank you for all the good information, Steve. And I know that we here at The Day probably have a new appreciation for the work you do, and perhaps the general public does too. Maybe we will get a chance to speak again when the pandemic is all but over. So I look forward to that day very much. And again, thanks for joining me here.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
In next week's edition of the Storyline podcast, we'll talk with staff writer Julia Bergman, who's been writing about those we lost through the coronavirus pandemic. And we'll also hear from staff members at The Day who have been working on one-line obituaries of those who have died in our region from COVID-19.